Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsors' approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
I'm Justin Gephardt. On today's episode, Jacob Everett of our Credit and Incentives Service Practice joins me to discuss hot topics in economic development across the country. As a certified economic developer, Jacob advises growing companies on their investment, location, and job creation strategies through site selection and analysis of workforce and economic impact. Enjoy the episode. So Jacob, I mean, kind of give everybody a little background on your story. How did you get into economic development? How did you come to join McGuire Sponsal?
Yeah, so economic development is an interesting world that I've lived in now for a long time. And I think that's one of the cool things about the industry is you get people from all different backgrounds that fall into it. There's not a lot of people, I think, that grow up and say, I want to be an economic developer. So it really is a rich industry because you get so many different backgrounds. You get legal, real estate, operations, community development, architecture, planners, everybody, business, all these kind of backgrounds come together in the industry, which is kind of cool. So I've been in the industry now for 12 years, and just like most people, I fell into it. Stumbled across a job in the workforce development sector, which is obviously heavily tied to economic development, and the rest is history. So I worked at the county level, I worked at the regional level, doing a lot of things from everything from business retention to business attraction and all the things that go along with that. And so I joined the firm, McGuire Sponsal, 2.5 years ago, and really, you know, trying to blend all my experience on the public side of economic development and bring that over to the private side and trying to serve our clients here.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. I mean, your experience, you've sat on both sides of the table now. So what is it that you feel like you bring from your prior experience to McGuire Sponsal and advocating on behalf of clients?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of my biggest values here in the role I have today is just really understanding what the world is like on the public side and how to navigate that world. And really, you know, economic development is really largely about partnership, right? How can the public sector and the private sector work together to achieve common goals? And those common goals, you know, tend to be focused around, you know, growth and investment and improving the community. And so, you know, there's a lot of people in the private sector that certainly have expertise in the private sector, but the navigation of the public side of it is, I think, where we bring a ton of value.
Awesome. You know, the term economic development, it's a pretty big category. How would you define that?
Yeah, so that's another fascinating thing about the industry that I think keeps me interested and excited about it. So if you go back, you know, a few decades, you know, really economic development was what they refer to as, you know, chasing smokestacks, right? So you're chasing, you know, large industrial projects because that's where the economy was. And you fast forward to today, and there's still truth in that, right? I mean, you look at everything that's happened over the last few years. You've got some of these chip plants. You've got some of these battery factories that are going up. I mean, those are huge economic development projects around the country. And so let's not kid ourselves that, yes, people are still very much chasing those, and as they should be, because the economic impact to states with those projects is massive. But certainly the definition of economic development has evolved significantly from smokestack chasing only. So I think you see communities and states defining economic development much more broadly to include things like quality of life, to include things like housing, to include things like talent attraction. How do we get more people into our state, into our region to not only, you know, fill jobs, but also to, you know, put their kids in our schools and buy houses and spend their money, right? Those all have economic impacts as well. So certainly the definition today is broad. And I think that's one of the cool things is states and communities, you know, they have the independence and the authority to define what that means to them. And again, that's part of the role we play is helping our clients align projects with what communities and states are looking for. Because at the end of the day, for us to have a successful project, there's really got to be a mutual and shared outcome that both sides are interested in.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, you know, go out and meet with CPA firms across the country, and we talk about our credits and incentives practice. And everyone has this notion that it's the big sexy companies, you know, the Googles and Amazons of the world. And, you know, and as we start talking to them, no, it's a much small, there's a lot more companies that qualify. They don't have to be these multi-billion dollar international companies. And I mean, what can you kind of shed some light just on the kind of the breadth of that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Again, I think there's two points there. One, the type of companies, the size, how they're structured, what their ownership looks like, is largely irrelevant to their ability to access these kind of tools and partnerships with state and local government. So that is certainly a misunderstanding, you know, broadly. So, you know, in most states, you know, there's hundreds of deals, of projects done in cooperation with state and local government. So obviously, those are not all Fortune 500 companies, right? So many of those are privately held, they're mid-sized, they could even be on the smaller end, right? So it's all about aligning, you know, what the programs and the tools are designed to accomplish and aligning your project and defining that in a way that aligns. And if it aligns, there's value and there's partnership to be had. So it's really relatively removed from the ownership and the overall size. The other interesting thing is, again, to your point, you know, we think of the Googles and the Fortune 500s of the world. Again, as the definition of economic development has expanded, so has the variety of tools that are out there. So we look at things like housing, right? That's not thought of as corporate America necessarily, but there's programs to support housing. There's programs to support talent attraction. All those things kind of don't fit the traditional maybe definition of what people think when you know, Ford puts a new battery plant, you know, in Kentucky and what they're doing in Tennessee. So yeah, there's a broad variety of programs that fit broad variety of uses and company types.
So one thing that you guys do a really good job of is helping companies with location decisions. What you know, based on your experience, what are some of the factors or challenges that companies have looked at when they try to make decisions on their own and kind of balancing it with the economic development side? What are the mistakes that you've seen and kind of how do you guys help address that and streamline that process?
Yeah, so we try to be comprehensive and make sure there's a variety of options on the table and a variety of options that are evaluated. I think that there's a deference to just go to a known defined market, right? So I need to be in the Southwest, so I need to be in Dallas, or I need to be in the Midwest, so I need to be in Chicago. And those are great places to do business, and there's a lot of reasons to be there, but there's also a lot of reasons to be in some of the secondary markets that surround those areas. And that's what we try to be comprehensive about, is evaluating all of those, evaluating the pros and cons of each. I think sometimes those secondary markets maybe can be overlooked, right? So you're going in a primary market, and your real estate costs, your labor costs, all those things are going to be, you know, higher than a secondary market. But really, maybe you could have accomplished operationally the same things in the secondary market and had a lower cost and had some other, you know, benefits there. So I think just being more strategic about it rather than just, you know, putting a pin on the map and saying this is where I have to be is a missed opportunity to be more strategic about the long-term impacts of what that location means to your bottom line.
So looking at the economic development world today, what are some of the hot topics, you know, just different discussion points that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, so I think speed to market's the biggest thing out there. There's just a crunch in real estate, you know, despite how much real estate, and this is largely pointed at the industrial market because that's where everything's happening right now, but despite the amount of real estate that's been brought online over the last decade, There's still just a shortage. There's not enough out there. There's so much demand in the market. Obviously, the supply chain issues are impacting that, but they're just, people can't get in buildings fast enough. So I think that'll continue to drive things for the next foreseeable future, obviously the next year or two, because people can only build things so fast. So until something structurally changes in the economy, that's probably going to continue. So we're seeing companies, again, kind of being forced to make decisions maybe that they would prefer not to, just because they have to get their hands on real estate. And there's not a lot of a room for flexibility in the market. If you find real estate that works, and in many cases you're kind of forced to move maybe faster or more aggressively than you'd like to, but you risk losing the building and then being, you know, months behind where you need to be.
You know, another hot topic that I feel like every business experiences a labor force. Yeah. How is that impacting, you know, obviously a lot of what you guys do are it's based on job growth.
Yeah.
How's that kind of, what's the effect in the economic world?
Yeah, it's a huge impact. And I think, unfortunately, it was like this, you know, prior to COVID, and it remains, you know, the same or even potentially worse post COVID, but labor's tight everywhere. It's, I don't think there's very many places that you can just say, oh, there's this magical solution where there's this overabundance of labor somewhere in the country. Unfortunately, that's just not true. So I think companies at this point have accepted that it's a challenge they're going to have to deal with. Now, are there places that are probably better and a little more suited to have more, a little more capacity? Yes. Doesn't mean it's not going to be challenging, but there's probably some more flexibility in certain labor markets than others. And that's certainly something we help clients think through and evaluate. But yeah, it's a problem that companies have to deal with. Obviously, wage levels are increasing, and certainly companies that have the capacity to push those wage levels up, you know, that mitigates their risk and their ability to attract the talent they need. But it's certainly always interesting to us to look at, and these are things we do look at, is what are states, communities, regions doing to support those kind of things, whether it's training programs or efforts to attract new residents and those kind of things. And that's where all these intangible parts of economic development come in, you know, quality of life that attracts residents. If you're constantly growing your community, your population, that's a good sign for a business. So even though the labor market's tight, you know, there's, you know, kind of a constant influx of new people coming in to refresh, you know, the labor market and bring vitality to it. But no, I don't think, unfortunately, there's a short term solution to that. I think it's going to remain tight for a long time. I do think, especially because so much activity in the economy is industrial. I mean, we're continuing to see more and more emphasis on automation and artificial intelligence and all that, which I think can be scary to some people, but I don't think it's necessarily bad. I think it will help us solve some of these problems. It'll continue to drive lots of investment, which is good for the economy and frankly good for communities. But it certainly is interesting on the jobs front, because you're not necessarily, in most cases, you're not necessarily reducing jobs, but you're certainly altering the workforce and what you're asking workers to do.
So obviously with labor force and supply chain issues, a lot of unknowns on how that is solved. Do you potentially see any other changes on the horizon that may impact how economic development is kind of put together?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see just how long can we stay on this hot streak. I mean, it's fascinating to me that COVID, while it disrupted things, largely the economy just charged ahead, you know, and so we've had a hot streak that's been really incredibly long. And so there doesn't seem to be any huge markers on the horizon that's going to slow down. So I think, you know, the continued acceleration within the industrial market, I think, is what we're going to continue to see. I think in terms of credits and incentives, the fact that the workplace has been kind of disaggregated, right? I mean, what does it mean to work somewhere? You know, what does it mean for this to be your office or your location that you're assigned to, right? How often are you there? Those things have an impact on credits and incentives, right? So if we do an incentive project that's related to adding 100 people, where are those people going to live, and where are they actually going to pay their taxes? And all those kind of things matter, right? So I think we're going to see an evolution in what that means and how states and communities define that job growth. Obviously, you know, these incentive programs are tied to performance and compliance, right? So if you're going to set up an office in Seattle and add 100 people, what if half of them live in California or half of them commute in a couple times a month from Phoenix or whatever? I don't know that the industry's figured out exactly how to deal with that, because, you know, currently the current state of economic development really was not set up to handle that. So I think from a community standpoint, to have an office with people coming in and out and conducting business, that's not a bad thing, right? It's certainly different than having people, 100 people that live in that city. But how do you adapt to that with the programs and the way these tools are structured, I think is going to be an evolution within the industry over the next few years.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And again, you see firms, CPA firms all across the country, they're experiencing this.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the West Coast, you know, California has had a lot of people leave that state. You know, they're shifting to areas like Montana
yeah.
and Texas, and they're still working, but they're working remotely. And I think that's a very key point, is how do economic development boards kind of shift their programs to reward that type of business model? Because I don't think it's going away anytime soon. I think the remote workforce is going to be here with us for a while.
I totally agree, and you're right. It's how do you adapt the model, right? Because the model wasn't built for 2022 and beyond, yeah. Right? So how do you adapt that? And I would argue the same things with automation. I think the current models were not necessarily envisioned for, you know, what can be viewed as, you know, replacing workers, which again is not happening in our experience, but high capital investment, you know, little to no job growth. It can be easy to look at that and say, well, that's not what we want. And I could make very strong arguments, and I do make arguments that, especially with the labor market the way it is today, having your companies invest in the latest technology, repurposing existing workers and training them in different skills, I think that's a great thing for states and communities. So, but it doesn't fit the traditional model of we want companies to come here, spend money, and hire 500 people. We don't have the 500 people. Most communities don't have the 500 people anyway, right? Yeah. So let's encourage our companies to make these investments and stay at the top of the industry.
Absolutely. Well, Jacob, I appreciate you taking time to hop on the podcast and sharing kind of the state of the current economic world. And thank you to everybody that listened, and have a great day. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're interested in hearing more of Jacob's expertise, link to resources and his contact info can be found in the show notes.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social @McGuireSponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.